Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Robert, we could start in a number of places, but let's start with a follow-up to the Cody Rhodes angle with Brock Lesnar last week. Cody with maybe his longest in-ring promo in WWE to date in this run. My takeaway was he's feeling more comfortable and more confident after maybe, I don't know if Cody ever exudes insecurity, but maybe he was a little insecure or unsure given how things kind of went haywire in AEW with crowd popularity. It's got to be a boost to his sense of kind of knowing what his character is and how to portray it, that the fans just keep cheering for him and chanting for him. There doesn't seem to be much of any pushback. Part of that's the way he's booked, but part of it is the WWE fan base right now just kind of likes what he's bringing to the ring and also to his promos. A couple small things about the promo I might have done a little differently, but how did you feel about this as a follow-up? One of the small critiques would just be that was a pretty brutal thing Lesnar did to him, and there was a lot of smiling and kind of being sort of chill for a good part of the promo. Did you like the tone he struck, and just how do you think he's doing overall?
Yeah, I did like the tone. I think it was one of those things that had to be taken in its totality, because as it was kind of starting off, it kind of felt like it was about to go into like that Triple H territory of the really long droning promo. But he got it together. He brought it all in, and he made it all matter. It was more of almost a story time with Cody than the promo, but it ended with the promo. So I thought he struck the right tone, as you said, and credit to either him or creative. This is something I would think on paper would not do well, tonight or, the week after last week, or all the scar tissue basically from the last couple of weeks. But whatever that connection he has with the audience, he still has it even, despite everything that happened last week. I think he's really in tune with whatever this version of that character is. And it seems a little less of the, even in the Roman feud, he got a little bit of the patronizing kind of, an overindulgent is the right word. And this was long, so it kind of fits in that category too, but it worked. I mean, it worked on television, and the people in the arena who were kind of quiet through most of the night, they really got out for this promo.
Yeah. I think one of the things with Cody in the promo, because there's every Cody Rhodes promo, there's a little bit, it's like you're riding a roller coaster and all of a sudden you hear a noise you think you shouldn't hear. And you're like, oh my God, is this going to be one of those times that this just flies off the tracks? There's little moments with Cody where that sort of, you think that might be about to happen. Like when he goes, my friend Matt, it's like, what, who, why are we talking about Matt? And, well, who cares if you win or lose? And then Cody goes into explaining why winning and losing matters, except to Hall of Famers. And I'm like, what is he talking about? And then he kind of wound back by saying, hey, those people, their story is already told. But mine isn't. So I care about wins and losses. And sort of my thought was, who cares about Matt? I mean, you do. He's your friend. But who cares about somebody who says something as stupid as, who cares if you win or lose? You just got to be at WrestleMania. I wouldn't shine a spotlight on that. I wouldn't amplify that statement on national television in a promo. Of course winning and losing matters. That's all that should matter in a storyline sense. I mean, obviously, yes, Cody, the defense and sort of a off-storyline, off-camera way for Cody is, yeah, you got to main event WrestleMania, so what if you lost? You got to main event. I could imagine Cody talking to his friend Matt and saying, I'm really bummed out I lost, and it Matt going, hey, your day will come, but you got to headline WrestleMania, and that's what matters, not winning and losing. You got this great spot. That sounds like a conversation a friend would have with Cody that doesn't belong on air because it completely breaks the storyline that all that matters is winning the title, and that's completing a story. So I see this more, in wrestling these days than, decades ago, obviously, that weaving into meta, or think you're talking to a different kind of the fan base outside of the narrative structure, the realm of wrestling. And so that veered a little bit outside of it. And then the other thing I would have tweaked a little bit is when he said it's on him for losing to Roman because he didn't account for the lengths he would go to. And I think people cheer for wrestlers in part because, for all kinds of reasons. They think they're cool. They've got a good moveset. They identify with them, all of that. But part of what gets heels heat is cheating. And the idea is if you win with honor, if you win within the rules, you are better than a heel who cheats to win. And we're all here to find out who the best wrestler is. That's the core foundation of wrestling when it gets down to it. And you have to protect that as the core. And Cody is saying, oh, it's my fault because I didn't account for the lengths he went to. Reigns was willing to go to. I think that's sort of a middle ground because he's sort of acknowledging Reigns cheated, which is better than just ignoring it or saying it's all on me. But why not just say, you know, something along the lines of Roman will go to those lengths to win, and he pretends he's proud, but he shouldn't be. When I beat Roman, and trust me, that day will come, I won't need to go to the lengths Roman went to win. I'll win my way, a way that I can be proud of. Like, you want to throw a little heat back on the heel, or, you know, criticism at the heel for being proud of something that they have that they cheated to keep. And that aspect was missing. So he acknowledged Reigns cheated to win. And the only reason they do that is because the heel's supposed to get heat. That's why they book those finishes. But if you dissipate it in when the babyface goes, ah, who cares? Or I'm not going to talk about it. Or it's on me. Then you take away the whole purpose of the heel cheating in the first place. So this kind of was in the middle zone, which is better than some, but I still would have added that line of when I win and hold that title, and trust me, someday that I will, I'll earn my rematch. I'm not going to go to the lengths you did, Roman, because I won't need to, and I'll account for all your cohorts next time better. I have learned my lesson. I have learned how to battle that. So those are a couple critiques of, again, what I thought was overall an encouraging and strong, but, you know, a little bit at times, like I said, you're on the roller coaster, you're like, is this going to derail? A couple of those moments, but overall, a good promo from Cody. Robert, your thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I agree almost with everything you said. I do think on the thing about his friend Matt, you know, I think we know the nod that was kind of making. I don't know if his friend Nick also got in on the action. I'm not sure about that. But I think that was meta also in that, like, it was a way to the reconciling of what happened on Sunday too, from the fan narrative of, you know, we're not just going to move on with this, and this should matter. So I think it plays a little bit of like the analysis that Todd gave about it, about, you know, how it can make sense and go forward. I think the character of Cody Rhodes should not be thinking that way. But again, as you always point out, you know, a promo is not necessarily the place for meta stuff, period. So I think you could have kind of done with that, although he was probably driving home the larger point. Also on the, I didn't account for the lengths he would go. It's not as if like Roman had some devious plan out there for WrestleMania. And that kind of speaks to the bigger conversation of that finish. But like he had Solo, the guy who got kicked out of the match earlier, just kind of re-enter the match. So it wasn't as if Roman had this devious plan either. So that part, I actually noted that too. That just was just kind of a weird way of framing things.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, what matters in the end is crowds are cheering and chanting for Cody. So, you know, the fact that, they're cheering for him and he's saying enough to keep them on his side. But if you want to have fans, I think Cody should be a little more upset with what Lesnar did. I think just, you know, hit the tone and the violence, but he got there, you know, the way he looked at the camera and got intense. It kind of was a pop because he was even keel for the most part, intense, but even keel. And then he hit high points of intensity. It had some punch to it. And so, you know, I see the argument for that. With Lesnar, it doesn't feel personal yet, other than maybe Lesnar was jealous of Cody being the main event and he wasn't. And that now we've got two shows in a row where the announcers are talking about it and now Cody is. So maybe that is going to be the beginning, middle, and end of why Lesnar went after Cody. It's just, I want to be in the spot you were in. But you know, I would like to I'd still like Cody to be a little more angry at Roman, not to be like, you know, Roman should pass some purity test, but, you know, if Roman's going to brag about winning and Heyman's distracting the referee and Solo is giving Cody the definitive Samoan spike leading to Cody being prey for a spear, that's a pretty direct – that the sequence to losing is not something that Cody should just brush off as, man, I wish I would have been a little more prepared. It's like you got Samoan spiked by a guy who wasn't even in the match. So maybe you should, like – hold that against Roman a little more, you know, like let's be more explicit, but it's WWE's, you know, WWE's way is not doing that. Cause I think they're way too concerned about a babyface sounding like they're whining and crying, but the fact is if in any sport somebody cheated to that degree, of course the fan base for the home team, you know, the losing team are going to be up in arms, and the player should be too, or the fighter in USC should be too. I mean, so I don't know. I just think there's a little bit too much of shrugging it off. Because again, the point to Roman cheating isn't just to protect Cody. It's also to get heat on Roman, and you should consistently frame that as a bad thing. But Cody challenges Lesnar to a match at Backlash. And so, you know, that card is taking shape. Overall, you know, this felt a little bit odd as far as Raw goes, because, you know, they opened up by saying there are travel issues and some people weren't here. And then we had the late run-in from Sammy and Riddle. It otherwise felt like a, you know, full enough show, but they got to set you up for thinking it was going to be, you know, really stripped down. But in the end, overall, besides the Cody promo and a little bit of storyline with Bayley and company, it was just a show kind of built around some, you know, good semi-lengthy matches. Robert, do you agree with that overall assessment?
Yeah, you also had the Trish Hill turn, which yep. I think was another significant thing. This felt like very much you had to clean up the mess of last week's Raw after WrestleMania.
Yeah,
so
there is that.
So you had a little bit of the progress. You had the Lashley stuff. The Bloodline stuff didn't really progress. But yeah, this was a very average episode of Raw, but I don't mean that in a negative way, in that it was kind of like a water level version. It wasn't the Raw after Mania. It wasn't one of the blowaway Triple H era shows, but it did feel like a Triple H era show again.
Yes, yes. And I mean, so far it looks like for now that was a one-off last week where Vince happened to be in LA and he's riding high on the sale and he's got power back. So he flexed for 1 week, and then either he wanted to keep doing it and someone talked to him, or he just did it that week and wanted to go back to the life he was living, which is not traveling every week to TV. But he wasn't at SmackDown, and I don't believe he's at Raw tonight either. So maybe Paul Levesque can grab the reins and kind of steer things his way again. The Trish, like you said, the Trish drew another angle. It wasn't really a standalone segment as much as an angle after a match. And I was kind of thinking of like standalone segments other than wrestling. And it just was sort of one match after another tonight. You know, some of them had angles attached to them. But you don't see that as often with Raw, at least it doesn't seem like. It seems like there'd be more talking segments typically. Although we had the Heyman backstage promo, just because it's not in the ring doesn't mean it doesn't count for something, but it just felt more in-ring heavy. But like you said, an average show, but that's, you know, average isn't always bad. I mean, average for a show that's typically pretty good means it was pretty good.
Yeah, wait, I just try to tell you that every time I submit anything to you and you criticize it, this average isn't always bad.
Yes, yes. All right, let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves, and then we'll shift to listener interaction and then cover some other segments. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Monday, April 10th, 2023, and we are here talking about Monday Night Raw. That was in Seattle, and it is the second Raw after Mania and one of the last Raws until things get shaken up and the talent gets redistributed with a draft. So that should be fun. We are expecting to hear from Chris from Seattle in just a bit, who attended. He'll be our on-site correspondent, so we look forward to that. Hopefully that works out. And we invite you to give us a call and an email. I'll give that information out in just a second. But first, I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I'm the host of various podcasts throughout the week, free ones like the Wade Keller Podcast and post shows, and some VIP exclusives like the Wade Keller Hotlines, Everything with Rich and Wade, The Fix with Todd Martin, and post-pay-per-view roundtables. The VIP membership comes with a lot of other perks, too, so check out details at pwtorch.com/govip, including 35 years of archives of hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s, including my own old show in the 90s on KFAN Radio with some big-name guests. And in our podcast archives dating back 20 years, our newsletter archives dating back to the late 1980s, some really cool history, contemporaneous coverage that you can re-experience in the modern era through the lens of history. The other voice you hear is Robert Vijhos. He is the host of the PW Torch Daily Cast Monday Night Show, MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. And boy, did your show take on new relevance last Monday, Robert, and going forward, WWE and UFC now under the same ownership and going to be in the same spinoff company. Boy, you had to feel like you're one of the biggest news stories in pro wrestling history landed right in the cross section of your specialties.
It really was. And I got to tell you, myself and Rick Monsey, We do the show every Monday, and we always find the post-WrestleMania show to be our sort of put our feet up and just talk about WrestleMania and not do a ton of heavy MMA analysis. Oh, boy, did we have to throw away our notes and do a 2.5-hour show where we talked about WrestleMania, the sale, and had a UFC pay-per-view to preview last week. So
yes.
If you ever want to check out the show in its entirety, last week's show, and if you really like this voice, you can hear 2 hours of it if you check out last week's show.
Yes. Yep. So check that out. Search PW Torch on your podcast app. This is the best way to do it. And when you see the PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up, just subscribe to that for free. There's different shows every day of the week. A lot of different shows. Some focused on the indie, one focused on kind of the indie scene, another focused on going over a 30 years ago back issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the PW Torch 90s past cast, show focused on AEW, on and on. Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks following pay-per-views, and also just a live call-in format on Sunday nights like this, but more of a broad, general, big event discussion. And more. Just different show every day of the week. So check out that lineup. It is free. Search PW Torch. All right. We invite you to participate in the show we're doing right now. If you are live streaming it at WadeKellerPostShow.com, you can call and talk about Raw or your thoughts on the draft or your thoughts on MMA or UFC and WWE being part of the same under the same umbrella now since Robert is the co-host. Whatever you want to talk about, if it's somewhat related to Raw, you are invited to call. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's kick off today's show with VIP member Chris from Oklahoma and our VIP Express priority line here. Chris, welcome to the show again. What is on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Robert. I'm just curious what y'all's thoughts were on Raquel Rodriguez and how strong they made her look in that tag team match. I really was impressed with her because I wasn't sure about her when she came up. I didn't know much about her. But she really showed me something in that match. I was curious what y'all's thoughts were.
Robert, yeah, talk about that. And then and also broaden it out to what you think of what they did tonight with that match and that story.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly impressed with Raquel tonight. I mean by that, wasn't she was bad or anything. I just don't think she necessarily stood out to me the way she did to you. But they go kind of back and forth with keeping her strong. And I think she's a good candidate to stay strong because there's no one else really like her. Going into the match, you kind of had an idea of what direction this was headed. And I think we've been talking about this prior to Mania. So I don't think there was anything very creative about what they did with the heel turn. I'm a little intrigued by where they have Trish Stratus right now in her legendary status. It seems like sometimes she's considered like the Hulk Hogan of the women's division, and other times she's more like an Edge type of figure that they roll out for matches like this on free TV. I don't know how easy it's going to be in general going forward, and tonight might have been kind of an indication to get actual heel heat on Trish because she is so beloved and beloved in canon. It might be a difficult sell. I think based on what they did tonight and then looking at what they've done in the past, it was much easier the way they did it with Charlotte a couple years ago at SummerSlam. With that said, I think this is a good program to go to. It was kind of the logical place, and you need stuff for Becky to do while she doesn't have the title. So I'm curious to see how it is going forward. I don't know what factor Lita is going to play into it in the future. Hopefully minimal, and I'd say that nicely enough, but I mean, she is kind of a weak link, I think, in all of this.
Yeah. Chris, what else is on your mind?
Well, the other thing was, I was curious what Robert's thoughts were was, last week he said there wouldn't be no cross promotion between USC and WWE. Do you think that will ever change? I mean, do you think we could ever have a chance where we could see Conor McGregor in the WWE for like a one-off or something like that?
Yeah, Robert, talk about that.
So, I don't discount seeing Conor McGregor in WWE. I think you have to be wary of seeing UFC fighter Conor McGregor in WWE. And I've just been of the opinion, and I've been stronger in this as the week has gone on, that while the cross-promoting will be great as far as, you know, commercials and actual promos and even, you know, you can see an interview, so to speak, that is replayed maybe from one of their media partners, like BT Sports or something like that, I do not envision a world where the UFC wants to necessarily be associated with WWE programming. I think they worked very, very hard to distinguish themselves from WWE, and they're still dealing with betting scandals and issues of legitimacy and all of that stuff. So I think we are a very long way away from that actually being a reality. I think cross promotion and actually seeing fighters on Monday Night Raw, I think those are probably two distinctive things. I think there will be cross promotion as far as the degree to which it goes to. I still think that's very much up in the air, and my sense would be leaning that if the UFC has any say, which is also another factor, we know about this when the UFC was bought out by WME early on, Dana White kind of lost a lot of power. So it might not be their decision, but I would say if everyone can have their choices, that would be the direction that it would go.
I think it's more likely now if there's a novelty involvement of MMA fighters that instead of, you know, Junior Dos Santos showing up in AEW, well, you know, he's going to show up, more likely going to be – if I don't even know if the phone call will be made anymore. You know what I mean? Like if there's going to be some sort of guy – well, it would be a guy – if there's someone under UFC contract and there's a chance to do something in a pro wrestling realm, it's more likely to be WWE now. But mostly I think if there's a big fight coming up, you know, big UFC pay-per-view, maybe that fighter is at ringside and just sitting there. You know, we do see this a lot with football players or a movie star who's got a movie coming up and the movie studio's paying, you know, sponsoring Raw. Then maybe that fighter's at ringside and, you know, Corey Graves or whomever just goes, hey, look, there's that fighter. He's got a fight coming up this weekend. You know, check it out. Something along those lines, just to get his face in front of the Raw audience. I don't think UFC would be at all concerned about blurring of the lines between what they do and what WWE does. I think there's not a real insecurity as far as that goes, Robert. I think they're so open about WWE just being, you know, just, you know, scripted entertainment and UFC being legit sport. I don't imagine UFC would be too insecure about one of their fighters showing up at ringside.
Yeah, but I think they're still fighting that tide. I mean, I know people know what's worked and what's not, but I do think it's very, very fragile is why I say that. And so that's why, even if the common sense would tell you which direction you can go, I think that's why I have my sort of my ears up about that.
I know it's a while back, but when the XFL first launched, I just found it like sort of ridiculous that like sports writers are like, is Vince McMahon going to script football games? It's like, no. People can do different things in different realms. I mean, if somebody does magic as their career, but they also are coaching Little League soccer, that doesn't mean they're going to do magic to distract the referees during the soccer game. Like, they can separate their worlds. You know, like, I just thought that was just kind of silliness. Vince McMahon is a promoter, and he promotes scripted pro wrestling, and he can also promote real football games just because – yeah, but I actually think that, you know, that was a couple decades ago when people were first saying that, and I think that was more the generational sports writers who still remembered promoters trying to pretend wrestling was real and, like, lying to their face about it, and they kind of – that I feel like that's just the younger generation doesn't even think that way. You know, they outgrow that when they're 12, and they kind of get it for what it is, and they embrace it. So, yeah. Well, anyway, Chris, you can react to anything Robert and I said. Or bring something else up if you want.
Well, I just found it interesting when you talked about the magic in the soccer game. I could just imagine how funny that sounded. I don't know why. I do agree with you, though. I totally do agree with you. There's one more thing I just want to ask, and that's about the whole Bobby Lashley and Bronson Reed. Where do you see Bronson Reed at? I mean, do you think he will be... He looks like he's got the build. He got a good reaction thanks to Bobby Lashley.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see him in the future in your radar?
Great topic. This was a big week for him going up against Bobby Lashley. Robert, I've talked about Bronson. I'm optimistic of his upside. I don't know if it's like centerpiece top tier guy, but maybe right on the border of first and second tier. He can visit a main event now and then and be, you know, a good higher card utility guy. Not ruling out more than that. I think it not ruling out less than that, but sort of my over-under is sort of top of the second tier, bottom of the first tier, and has a nice career in WWE. I mean, he's got good promos, good in-ring skills, a distinct look and moveset. What do you think?
Yeah, and he's a guy that's thought of highly, it seems like, everywhere he goes, you know, including New Japan and everything else. So people want to work with him and have them in their company. I really just think, and this is such a generic answer, but I think it really applies to him. It depends on how he's portrayed, like, after the Bobby Lashley feud. If he is just here to feud with Lashley and then disappear into the background and maybe have a sillier gimmick or become less than, I don't think his ceiling is very high. But, you know, there's always kind of a need for that upper mid-card guy, as you are saying, kind of that gatekeeper. And someone like him, I think you can build as a guy who a victory over him will always kind of matter. And can be a signal of things going forward. As you said, I don't see him as a title holder, as a world title holder, necessarily even a world title challenger. Although I'm sure in elimination chambers and those kind of matches, he will probably frequent. I mean, I definitely can see him as a Brock Lesnar opponent. I think that makes sense, and that might just be as much of a peak as anyone can hope for. But I think, you know, if everyone gets along and all the heads prevail, I think he can be a long term guy in that exact zone that you put him in.
What were the pros and cons of how he performed against Lashley tonight?
I wouldn't say there were very many cons. And again, it was, you know, a match plus an angle. I thought he looked like he belonged there. If he got outshined at all, it was because that crowd was really into Lashley tonight, and, you know, Lashley has been able to keep himself over despite, you know, not really even being booked for the last 2 months.
Yeah, I thought Reed was portrayed as a equal of Lashley, and they really made a big deal out of Lashley being able to accomplish any kind of power moves against Bronson Reed because of Reed's size. And so there's certain things they just want to portray as impressive, and it, or what makes Reed formidable in a way that others don't have going for them. And again, some of that, so much of how a wrestler gets over is how WWE frames them, how they portray them, how the announcers talk about them, how their opponents who are more established sell for them and play off of them. And this, all of that tonight sent a message to viewers who are pliable, who aren't sure about this guy yet, that he's a big deal and someone to watch. He's not just there to be, win a couple squash matches here and there, but then just, you know, lose to Bobby Lashley. And the double countout finish plays into that, which is, oh, they're protecting him. You know, Lashley's a top guy in this company, or, you know, visits the very top spot in WWE at times. And even he didn't get to beat Reed. And that's, you know, you don't want to do double count of finishes too often. But when you do, there should be a reason for it. And here's a case, you know, they wanted to get across the idea that these two are equals, and they just battled and lost sight of the referee's count, and it is has a big to-be-continued sign on it, and I thought that worked for this match. So, Chris, I mean, short answer, I'm glad Bronson Reed is being protected and featured, and I think he'll have good matches, and I think he's one of those wrestlers, too, who can have really different matches that are high quality with a wide range of styles and sizes of opponents. And that makes them really valuable in WWE too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys. And I appreciate it. And I'll listen to you the rest of it in the morning. And thank you.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks for calling, Chris. Appreciate your VIP membership. All right. We'll move next to Brad in Florida. If you want to get on the line, you can give us a call 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558, push 1, or you can email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Brad, thanks for calling. Brad in Florida. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hi, Wade. Hi, Robert. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. We finally got some nice weather here in Minnesota. Sure. Went out biking the last 2 days. Feels like spring is here.
Freaking awesome, man. Awesome. The match of the night for me tonight was the Alpha Academy's match with the Usos. I thought that this version of Alpha Academy was, like, there was just something about it that was so different. Like, I don't know if it was just that they pushed the Usos to the limits or how much comedy they were able to weave in with, you know, real actual great wrestling and mix the two in a way that wasn't like off-putting at all. And I wanted your opinion on that match, both of you, because I thought that that match said to me, like, I thought that this was a team that was probably breaking up, and they still might be. But after seeing that, I'm like, wow, this is a team that I would really like to see as the tag team champions. I mean, that's how great this match was tonight, and how, I mean, Gable was so funny. Otis was so funny with, you know, the dance moves and, you know, hitting everyone with his butt and shimmying and all the stuff they were doing. But still, they were able to keep it, like, at a level you're like, wow, they're actually really good at wrestling, too. Like, it was just so entertaining, and I feel like the crowd felt that way, and obviously as a viewer, I felt that way. Am I missing something, or was that not a terrific, terrific spectacle that they put on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Gable and Otis in the chemistry with the tag team. I do sense they have had different thoughts of different things to do with Otis and the Maximum L Models, and I don't know if they're on course or they're straying a little bit. I enjoy, to a point, Maxine, you know, gushing over Otis being, you know, sexy and model-like, and then talking about Gable being, you know, a little gremlin and not worthy of her even, you know, looking at him. But it's got to go somewhere, you know, and I don't know at what pace they're going to get there. But if they keep Otis and Gable together, and I mean, I don't know what the story arc, Robert, is, if they don't break them up, because it seems like that's kind of where they were headed. But I guess at some point, Otis might stand up for Gable because Maxine is just being so mean and get past being so flattered by getting the attention of a woman in this way. So I'm open-minded and curious about where they're going with it. I'm not convinced they know or are staying on a specific path, if not stalling a little to figure things out. But whenever I see Gable and Otis are coming out to work a tag match, I know it's going to be good. And I look forward to it. And tonight was no exception. And given the stature of Usos, Robert, boy, did they give Gable and Otis a credible amount of offense in near falls. And the crowd was buying it. And then when the Usos won, it felt like the Usos accomplished something. You know, Graves was really stressing. Roman Reigns isn't mad at the Usos. He's disappointed in them. And he asked, you know, Kevin Patrick, does it bother you more when he's disappointed in you or angry at you? And, you know, he's like, oh, disappointed. And yeah, that's how Roman feels about the Usos. So they framed this match as important for the Usos. So when they did win, it felt like it served a storyline purpose, but also they beat somebody who's a team that's pretty good and kind of pushed them to the limit. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of, I think, Team Hell No vibes from this, where you do wonder what the initial plan was, but then the chemistry of the two individuals kind of takes off. Because the Maxine stuff, I'm kind of with you. I don't actually see it going anywhere at this point, other than it's kind of a catalyst to this version of the team. I just don't know where it fits in as far as a payoff, because it's like I'm not really looking forward to a Gable Otis feud in that kind of way. It's not like Otis really needs to get one over on Gable. I don't view him as the kind of the victim or the subservient in the same way that storyline has tended to be done. And I think we've talked about this a few times on the show, where that's the type of act that generally people on podcasts like this, we don't like, because it's so silly and so much of the ha-ha stuff. But both those guys are just really good at that. And they're, as long as they kind of keep the wrestling side up, you know, I think they can be okay, because they're silly but not necessarily frivolous like all the guitar players are on the show. They just kind of do that, and it's more of a performance. These guys are at least actively involved in whatever story they're in, and it feels less of the performance art that other similar acts tend to fall into.
Yeah. All right, Brett, back to you for follow up on that or another topic.
Yeah, sorry for clanging those dishes together. I didn't mean to do that. No, but that's a great point. I almost feel like they need to, if they were going to break them up, call an audible, the Street Profits, like almost like how I'm sure there was many times they were going to have Orton turn on Riddle, and they're like, we're not going to do it yet. Not yet. Not yet. And then they just didn't do it, and it turned into, like, you know, this incredible thing. I don't know. That was just really awesome for me. And, you know, there had to have been some major, and forgive me if you discussed it on the beginning of the show, But there had to be some major travel issues because you had no, you know, MVP or Omos or Theory or Damian Priest or, you know, Bianca, Miz, Seth. I mean, you were missing a lot of people on the show. And I'm just curious if, Wade, if you guys heard there were legitimate travel issues or if that was something that Heyman was just kind of saying to kind of, you know, get that main event spot at the end and to have it make more sense. Because I think were there legitimate travel issues? Because it just felt like a lot of people were missing tonight. It still ended up being a great episode.
Yeah, it was weird because the first when he said that, like, I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be interesting. What are they going to – because I hadn't heard about it, any travel issues. So I'm like, what are they going to do to fill out this show? This might be a weird show. And then by the time they listed, like, the matches that were scheduled, I was like, well, this is a pretty good show. You know, that's pretty good list of talent. And when you look at who was not on the show this week, who was last week, yeah, Omos and MVP, Elias, Austin Theory, maybe. Sami Zayn came out later and Riddle did, so if they had issues, they got there. The Street Profits, Bianca Belair, trying to think who else. I think that's about it.
Judgment Day. I mean, they were kind of there.
Oh, yeah, Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest.
And then the dudes that keep helping Rhea as well weren't there, so like that was
like
a little more stripped down.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, as we kind of walked through, yeah, I mean, I think had they not said anything, I don't know if people would have been thinking a lot about it, to be honest. But, yeah, I think when you throw in Legado del Fantasma, Austin Theory, like Miz, MVP, Omos, I mean, some of them you would think maybe just would have the week off. You know, WrestleMania is such a busy stretch. It's nice if some people have a week off, too, and they could just kind of weave that into the few weeks after Mania. But, yeah, so I did not independently confirm a bunch of people were having travel issues. I just didn't have a chance to do that. So I don't know for sure either way. But I guess looking over last week's lineup, Robert, it seems like they probably would have had more people there if they could have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on I know this is really unimportant, but do you think on Friday night they bring back Rick Boogs with Nakamura? Because we've been advertised this Nakamura return, which I am excited for. Boogs wasn't on the show either tonight. I mean, you have to remember, like I know it's easy to forget, but like Boogs was on his way to like actually becoming like extremely popular. They kicked off WrestleMania in a tag team match against the Usos. They were the first match. Boogs, you know, every arena, my name's Rick, the entire crowd is screaming Boogs. And on Raw, they've turned him into like this out-of-control misfit over the last few weeks who's teaming with Elias in some way. Like, do you think that combo gets back together? Because I really thought that combo was very special, like another like kind of Otis, Gable, Randy, Riddle, like odd couple type of pairing that just really, really worked. And I'm just curious, I know that's not really in relation to tonight's show, but I'm curious your thoughts on whether those two get back together or whether that's not something that happens. And overall, I did think it was a really good show tonight. I actually, even with all those people missing, I think they did a really terrific job of making it entertaining and interesting, and it was way better than last week. So kudos to them. I thought it was very good.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it just sometimes just having kind of a – almost felt like a house show. Like, it's just a good house show. You know, like, just some matches that aren't, like, necessarily pay-per-view quality, but enough backstory or enough novelty to them, and they were given some time to breathe, and there's just some talent on the roster. Like, Ray and Finn Balor, like, that you could imagine that being, like, a dream match that people would travel to some big, you know, independent show WrestleMania weekend to see if neither guy was in WWE, you know, given their histories and their background and the novelty of those two in the ring against each other. And then, you know, Lashley and Bronson Reed is this like, you know, first time battle and it's intriguing. And then you had, you know, special women's tag match sort of out of nowhere or the substitution out of nowhere that forwards a storyline. But, you know, the match itself felt like they were putting some time into it. So I don't know. Yeah. It's just, and then, you know, Solo, it's still novelty to see Solo Sikoa out there. And I thought he had a good performance. Even the three-way match, I wasn't expecting a lot from it, only went 8 minutes. And no, there was a commercial break in the middle, so not a lot to it, but it worked well. And as we already talked about, the Usos match was strong. So just a good, you know, the 3 hours flowed pretty well for me. Robert, your thoughts?
I do think you are correct about that, as we spoke about earlier. To your point about boobs, I hope not, because that was one of the most grating parts of the show to me about a year ago with Nakamura and Boob. So I really hope that's not the case. I feel like the difference between that is, like, again, whether it's Randy and Riddle or what we're doing with Otis or I reference Team Hell No, there's or even like the Rusev stuff back in the day, there's generally both of the characters have to be genuinely liked in that respect. I don't get that sense from Boogs, and I don't get the sense that people necessarily liked Shinsuke in that role, even if it would get a pop. I think there's a difference between getting a pop and people being really into something. So on that note right there, I just kind of hope that is not the case. I hope you're wrong on that one.
Well, I'll push back, because Boogs is one of my guilty pleasures, and I feel truly guilty about getting any pleasure out of that, because he's so obnoxious and stands for so many things that I stand against. And yet,
you of all people, Wade.
I know, and yet there's just something.
I'm disappointed, yeah.
I go in full, I deserve it. But there's just something about Boogs being so all in. He is just, you know, he just, and again, there's something about what he's doing that doesn't grate on me the way that Mojo Rawley did. I think there's a chance I change my tune soon, but there's been just a couple things here and there where I'm like, I'm kind of enjoying this. And Boogs and Nakamura could be fun playing off each other if they want to do a tag team. You know, have them as a tag team. Maybe that works better for Nakamura at this point if he doesn't want to be working full-fledged singles matches with all the, you know, the wear and tear on his body from over the years. But I personally would aim higher for Nakamura after he's been away for a while. I think you can bring him in and get something more significant out of him than just being, you know, a odd couple tag team with Rick Boogs and Boogs, you know, providing a lot of the energy. And I don't know. So, yeah, I guess I would hope for something higher end for Nakamura, and then maybe you go back to Boogs later if you still are sort of enamored with the chemistry between those two. Brad, anything else?
No, but thanks for answering that. I get it. It's not for everyone, but for me, it was like one of my favorite things. Maybe it was enhanced a little bit by Pat McAfee dancing on the table, who I really soured on a little bit since WrestleMania. I don't really miss him. I used to really love seeing him every week on Friday. Now I'm more of a Wade Barrett guy, and I don't want that to change. So, no, thanks for taking the call, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Brad. Always good hearing from you. All right, let's go ahead and bring on Chris, our on-site correspondent, who attended Raw tonight in Seattle. Chris, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I don't know who's going to be your guest tonight, because I literally just came on the phone now, so I haven't had a chance to listen to any part of the show, but whoever your guest is, welcome to them too.
Yeah, Robert Vijos is co-host tonight.
Hi, Chris.
Chris, we're just talking about the show and how I said it felt, other than like the big Cody promo, and then, you know, there was an angle with Trish and the backstage promo with Heyman and the backstage promo with Bayley and her crew. But it felt almost like maybe the fan experience was more like just a kind of a good house show with some novel matchups. And it seemed like the fans were into the wrestling and into what they were watching to differing degrees. But, so I'm just kind of curious for your take, for what you expected from a live three-hour TV production, and then if this felt different than what you were expecting, just because it felt pretty heavy on in-ring wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised, actually, with the amount of in-ring that we got tonight. But, you know, throughout the whole, well, pretty much the majority of the show, the crowd were, you know, pretty, you know, up for it, positive, and there was a lot of good responses. So, I mean, I'd agree with you that it did generally feel a bit more like a house show, but something, you know, there wasn't any big, big angle. But, I mean, I guess even last week, you know, I haven't actually had the chance to fully watch Raw and SmackDown, but I caught up on your reports, and it does seem like right now that there's you know, after WrestleMania, you know, huge show, and I was kind of thinking maybe there might be something a bit more significant this week, because I think last Monday and even on SmackDown there wasn't these you know, it was, you know, a bit of a reset for them, and as you mentioned, everyone's a bit fatigued from you know, WrestleMania and all that. So yeah, the Trish angle, that was the one that was, you know, I guess for me at least anyway, you know, I wasn't expecting that. Maybe I, you know, from not watching the shows last week, there were signs of that happening, but it kind of caught the crowd a little bit off as well, because, you know, we were all kind of suspecting you know, Becky and Trisha kind of, you know, walk back and that'll be the end of it. So, but, you know, I mean, in terms of sponsors throughout the whole night, I was surprised because I'd never been to a 3-hour Raw before. I've been to a couple of tapings way back in the day, a couple in the US and a few in the UK, when it's a 2-hour show. So I was actually quite interested to see how the crowd, you know, the energy and the fatigue would kick in. I mean, I'd say the only time it really kind of went down a little bit was there was a match, I think, just before the main event. I can't think of it right now. I think it was the EO
the
Sky,
women's triple threat
match.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then that actually turned out to be a pretty good match, and the crowd kind of got more into that and invested. I mean, EO,
yeah,
you know, got a really popular reaction, I'd say. I was quite surprised at that, given her role in, you know, with Bayley, and you know, she's kind of been in left in the back a little bit, and it seemed the crowd were really into her. I mean, she did a few good, you know, spots and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I've made some notes here anyway, because I listen to your show most weeks, and I kind of know the routine of what you are. So I've kind of made, you know, enough notes to kind of, so you can just fire away and ask me, and I pretty much hopefully got it all written down here. So.
Yeah, well, first, just, you know, a real standard question is who got the biggest crowd reactions, and were you surprised at somebody getting more than you anticipated in terms of, because that's always something to watch. You know, when I go to house shows, I'm always like,
yeah,
or any TVM for that matter, like it stands out like, oh, that person's gaining some traction that I wouldn't have expected, at least on this night. So anything jump out in that way also?
Yeah. I mean, but the EO one, which I mentioned, that was surprising. But in terms of, you know, Raw tapings, because there was a few surprising ones I'll tell you about main event in a moment. But, you know, number one was Cody, and it was, you know, I'd say by a decent amount. I mean, the Usos were probably two, which is, you know, I was a little bit surprised, but I guess, you know, they've been getting reactions anyway. And so Cody was definitely number one. He's still getting, you know, really, really good positive reactions. A couple of boos, but nothing, you know, significant at all. I mean, maybe it was just in the area that I was in. I heard a few boos, but like, I'm talking like just a couple where I was sitting, didn't hear anything else around the arena. So yeah, the Usos got a good pop. Ray got a good you know, good ovation as well. I mean, I think Ray is on a really, you know, from what he was doing prior to when, you know, Dominic and everything, he's really come a long way in terms of, you know, feeling a lot more fresher again, at least in my eyes anyway, and I think in a lot of the fans, because, you know, I mean, we all love Ray over the years and whatnot, but yeah, I felt until the whole Dominic, you know, story and things, he was, you know, just not, he wasn't going for the motions, but it was just like, there wasn't really much happening with him. So he's still like, I guess, you know, kind of riding off of that whole, you know, successful, you know, story and whatever with his son. And in terms of like a big pop, and I think this is mainly because it was main event and it was like the first sort of couple of wrestlers to come out. And that always is a little bit of a, you know, not a true reflection, because, you know, when Ziggler got a huge ovation, he came out and he fought Tyler Bate. And I was like really surprised when, you know, his music hit and everyone just like,
yeah,
jumped off their seat. And I'm like sort of sitting there like, you know, really? Like I kind of feel the same way you do about Dolph. You know, I mean, you've mentioned things about him over the years and his act and what he wears and just, you know, I was really into him at some point in his career. And I'm not even joking, probably about 10, 12 years ago now, but for a long time, I felt pretty much what you've been saying about him, Wade, and others as well, that he's you know, just very, very stale. And even that slight change up in his act didn't really do it for me. So that was surprising. Who else? Bobby Lashley, he got a good ovation as well. Bobby, you know, he was positive reaction for him. And, you know, in terms of like least over, in terms of like no interest at all, Mia Yim, probably no surprise there as well. And sadly, Piper Niven, I mean, you know, I think she's very talented.
Yeah.
And I think the crowd do, but it's not giving us anything to care about her. You know, even when they changed her name back, I felt like, they just did nothing. They just slightly changed the, you know, the entrance music, you know, remixed it a little bit to make it a bit more heelish. And, you know, the graphic on the screen is just so like unimaginative, I think. So there's just nothing there to get anyone excited. I mean, even though I really like her as well, and I've enjoyed her work in the UK, you know, that's where I'm from originally. yeah, I was just, there's nothing to sort of get excited about with her. So, and, you know, prior to the event as well, just before Raw went on the air, I mean, not that this is massively, any, you know, a big thing here to note, but it's still worth noting is that New Day got, you know, it's like a New Day chance, and it kind of like echoed throughout the whole arena prior to the show going live.
Oh, weird.
and again, like, you know, I kind of feel exactly the same way you do about the New Day and, you know, their act, and just like Ziggler, they're very, very stale. So, you know, hopefully, you know, Triple H, whoever's in the back, isn't listening and thinking, oh, God, now we need to keep pushing them because, you know, I just want them to change their rivalry. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, you get one or two people in the crowd and everyone just sort of follows suit. And the WWE crowd is quite, you know, obedient in that way. They just kind of follow the you know, the whatever the response is. So I wouldn't
they,
read too
they
much
eat what
that,
they're fed, as we say.
Pretty much, yeah. These days they do. These days. I mean, I feel like since the pandemic, I just feel like for some reason, yeah, I don't know what fans have gone away, but I mean, yeah, everyone's very much just following along to the story and to the show, which is fine. I mean, I don't ever want to go there and like just you know crap on the product for no reason. But sometimes, you know, I think it is good sometimes when the fans speak out rather than just kind of going with the flow. But
I will say, Chris, in WWE's defense, I think they just are more in tune with what the fans, and they're not fighting the fans lately. So when I say the fans eat what they're fed, it does sound a little derisive, like, oh, they'll just cheer anyone they're told to cheer. I actually just think WWE's doing a better job than, you know, if you listen to some of the 5 years ago and 10 years ago flashback shows we put up on the Wade Keller podcast feed and post show feed, you know, the disconnect between what fans want and what Vince McMahon was pushing was more pronounced than it is right now. So part of the fans not rebelling is because WWE's kind of, I think, casting wrestlers, to use a movie or TV term, you know, they're casting wrestlers better. They're more in tune to what the fans want rather than, you know, Vince McMahon's personal wins.
I would agree with that, Nicole. I mean, I just think that there's been times, though, before when fans just want to, you know, go against the grain a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I think overall,
yeah.
You know, like you said, things are a lot more in line with you know, how, you know, fans are responding to. So yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that overall, but you know, sometimes they just want to kick out, and I don't think it happens too much these days. So, but yeah, I mean, I've got a few other notes here about you know, the attendance as well. That was you know, not surprising to me because the product is you know, pretty hot right now in terms of the, you know, today's wrestling. Crowd was almost full, I'd say. I would say the sellout, I mean, I saw a couple of empty seats, but that can just be sometimes from, you know, people going, you know, to the bathroom or getting some, you know, getting some drinks or whatever. So I would say it's almost a sellout from what I saw. What have I still got here in my notes as well? One of the things I didn't mention as well, not that they were not over at all, but in terms of responses, you know, Becky and Trish's entrances got very, very mild response. And I think that's a trend with Becky, unfortunately, right now, that, you know, in other cities that she's going to, she's not getting that same, you know, sort of positive response that she was getting. But again, I personally don't really blame her for that. I just think that, you know, the opponents that she's been facing and, you know, the heels that they've been lining her up, it's not enough. That is not over with, you know, so they need that good dance partner to really, you know, to sort of to get that, you know, positive response. So, yeah, I mean, but that wasn't really a surprise. I just thought it was worth noting because, I mean, it's continuing with even Trish as well. I did think Trish would get a bit of more of a positive response. But, you know, I mean, a lot of the fans there as well, even sitting close to me, you know, a lot of me very young, and even though I don't feel that Trish wasn't in WWE long ago, you know, I mean, it probably was about a good 15, 20 years ago now, or 15 years ago now, I'd say, that was her sort of her time. So that is still quite a long time ago. So I guess that's why she doesn't really get such a big crowd response. But
she's not really self-generating new fans through any being given a chance to do much. I mean, I thought that if there's some, you know, when we were praising the in-ring quality, I should put a little qualifier on it. I thought some of the Reed Lashley stuff got a little funky or awkward because they just hadn't worked together a lot and they were trying to do stuff. But especially in the women's tag. I felt like some of the double team spots were more ambitious than they should have been given, you know, who's in the ring. And, you know, Trish being well past her just, you know, kind of physical prime, and she's just not working a ton of matches. She's got some of her, you know, wrestling legs under her after being around for a while now. When I say it was like a good house show, I don't think everything was smooth, but there was some that was really smooth. But I think that's part of it with Trish. It's like fans are looking at her going, well, I know she was a big deal back then, but she was gone for a long time, and now they're featuring her as if she's as good as today's wrestlers. And that was a whole different era, and she's got to show us she's still that good. And she's not, you know, she's a little below average on the microphone. And, you know, Robert, going full circle, nothing wrong with being average, but, you know, I think she's a little below average on the microphone in terms of, you know, getting herself over just on that. And then in the ring, you know, I mean, she's fine. You know, I think in WrestleMania there were some good spots and a couple things that looked a little bit clunky, but there's not enough to make up for the downside in terms of what she's, you know, how long it's been since she was a centerpiece. And so that kind of actually leads into my question for you on that is when she turned, were fans like angry or were they confused or like, did you get a sense of the emotional reaction? Like how dare her or why would she do that? That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to what you said before I answered that question. I mean, the only thing is like Lita also her run finished the same time as Trish and, you know, Lita still gets very, very positive reactions. So maybe what I said about her being gone for so long isn't completely accurate because, you know, Lita has probably been gone around about the same time. And when she comes back, she still gets a really strong reaction. But that's just a side thing, side note there. But in terms of the reaction to what happened when she turned, I mean, like, it didn't really get a big sort of ton of heat from, you know, I mean, I don't know if it came across in camera, but it was, you know, there was booze there and a little bit, but in terms of, there was more like people like, at least for me, like booing, but like in a, like a laughy kind of way, not genuinely like angry with it or like disgusted. It was more just kind of like, hey, she's just done that and, you know, and boo, but it was more like, it wasn't very, very much like the crowd were really, really upset. It was just like, oh, that happened. That's how I felt. I don't know how it came across on TV. I mean, you know, because that's why you get the calls to come in, because you get different sort of vibes sometimes when you watch it at home. But it wasn't a ton of booze, I guess.
Let me throw to Robert for any follow up on anything that Chris brought up, or another question you have for him about his experience tonight in person.
Sure. So, I mean, you've answered a lot of the kind of storyline related stuff. I am curious though about the vibe in the building based on as it was presented on TV with all the travel issues. And as Wade pointed out, it was still seeming like a fully staffed Raw, even if a lot of people weren't there. Was there any disappointment in the building with anyone that was advertised that wasn't there, or did it not really come across as a big deal one way or another in the building?
And I'll insert before Chris, you answered, the announcer said at the top of the show, there are travel issues with wrestlers. A lot of them aren't here. I don't know if they addressed that in the building. So you can, I just want to contextualize Robert's question with that in mind, because you might not have known that they said that on TV.
Sure. No, I didn't hear that. And I was pretty much there from the, you know, from right at the beginning of the show, even before main event. And I didn't get that at all. They didn't announce that. If they did, I wasn't listening or just not paying attention, but I was pretty invested in on the show, especially knowing I'm going to be on the show. So I didn't get that. In terms of like appointment for anyone not being there, the only one was, which is the classic when they kind of like advertise, you know, a wrestler who's not there, who's going to be back next week. So the one that I, you know, comes to my mind was Lesnar. He's going to be, I think, on Raw next week. Yeah, the classic kind of boos a little bit. I mean, I actually attended both nights of WrestleMania. I'm actually living in Germany, and me and my wife came over here, and we were on like a 3-week vacation off US and Canada. So I was at the event, you know, in LA. And for me, like at least my expectations were on Raw, you know, I kind of know what it gets. It's a TV show. You know, there's not always going to be every single star on every show. So at least my expectations were kind of in check. You know, I wasn't really disappointed that I didn't see anyone. And even if I wouldn't have seen Sammy at the end, who wasn't advertised to be there, you know, from my perspective, you know, I'm not expecting, you know, everything to happen. I mean, it's kind of raw, and I watch it every week when I'm back home, so I kind of know usually how it goes. And yeah, at WrestleMania, I guess for me personally, I kind of got everything, you know, I wanted in terms of seeing every single star and every big match. So from a personal perspective, I was kind of pretty satisfied with my last few weeks of being here and seeing what I saw. So I was just looking forward to seeing Raw, and as I said, I haven't attended one for many years, so it's different seeing it in an arena when it's a lot smaller, you know, the stadium. I mean, even my wife, who's not a wrestling fan, she said to me, like, God, it seemed a lot louder tonight. And you know, it's partly because it's much more of an intimate setting compared to a 80,000 in SoFi. So
yeah,
from that side, it was I was looking forward to it, and I was already in Seattle anyway. So when I saw Raw was here, I just kind of thought, I'd get tickets. And so I'm not a regular, I'm going to the events here. I know sometimes that's helpful to have that, because you can kind of compare from previous shows. So I haven't really got that comparison. But I mean, I can compare it to other shows in the US that I've been to in Raw in the past, and off my memory, shows taping, TV tapings in London. And I was actually pretty impressed with the crowd. I mean, I mean, a lot of fans kind of think that the UK fans are like, crazy loud and things like that, because we don't get very often. And that is partly true. So I was thinking that there'd be a lot less enthusiasm for the show. And so I was quite pleasantly surprised at how positive pretty much how there wasn't so much fatigue, which I know it does happen, for sure. It does happen at other arenas. I mean, from listening to your show, you mentioned it. And I can see it on TV when it goes down. But, they did a pretty good job at, keeping the crowd, invested, even when they were having the breaks. I mean, you notice anyway from people that are calling in, they mentioned about, DX Chop Cam or whatever they have. I mean, we had a few different ones here, which I haven't heard before. There was... let me see here what it was that was keeping the crowd going. It was, let me see my notes one second. So there was like sign of the night where they kind of panned to the crowd and everyone's holding up their signs and things. And there was a couple of like WrestleMania. They're still showing these WrestleMania movie parody commercials with The Miz and the Titanic ones, which I was surprised about, but they're still trying to plug it on the network on Peacock. So there was that, and it flowed pretty well. I mean, I just spoke to my wife about it, who is not a wrestling fan at all, and I asked her, and she was pretty much giving me quite an honest answer. I said, "Oh, how was it for you? Did you think it went fast?" And she was, "Oh yeah, didn't drag too much." And so even from her, who's not even wrestling, WWE at all, it was still went through quite seamlessly. So I think that's a positive. So they seem to have got that under wraps now, whereas I know in the past, they've not been so aware of.
Yeah, pre-COVID it was an issue.
And then they've not been so concerned with the fans in attendance and some purely just for TV. But they are seem to be they seem to have got a lot better at that. So,
Robert, do you want to chime in with any other question for Chris?
I'm just curious. We always ask this: demographics and merchandise. Anything that stood out, and can you comment kind of on the makeup of this crowd?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a lot more, kids and with their parents than WrestleMania from what I saw. And again, that is, my only kind of comparison, at least in recent memory. So there was a lot more families there. There was also, behind me in my row, just hearing what they're talking about, because literally sat directly behind me. There's people that weren't even aware. They were just kind of seemed very, very casual fans. They kind of knew a few of the, like Bobby Lashley and there's Brock Lesnar, but like some of the wrestlers in the ring, they were having a conversation between themselves, like, who's this guy? And it does seem like a lot of these shows and TV tapings, WWE's in their city, let's just go and see what's about. So in compared to WrestleMania, where you generally get the sort of hardcore fans that have either traveled across the world to be there. So in terms of merchandise, yeah, I had a look. They were selling Cody t-shirts, and there was a few people buying them. I saw that. Cena was also there as well. And maybe they were just trying to sort of flog the last of Cena shirts, and I guess he still sells pretty well, given his name. Who else? Yeah, I mean, there was like, she was saying like money in the bank briefcase and things like that was there, which is quite strange given the fact that it's not until July, I believe. But yeah, other than that, yeah, Cody was definitely the biggest, you know, star of the night, at least from what I found, or what I, from my perspective. So, but yeah, I just felt like it was a bit of an uneventful show, apart from the Cody promo and the women's, you know, Trish and turning on Becky. One thing to note as well at the end, once the show went off the air, Kevin Owens and Sammy were in the ring and they were having a bit of a laugh around with the crowd. And then Kevin got on the mic and just pretty much put over the whole team. Did the classic John Cena post, you know, babyface, you know, send everyone home happy promo. But it didn't seem like, you know, it was just him sort of saying, it generally seemed quite genuine. He was just saying that the whole week's been crazy, WrestleMania, and it really was one of the highlights of his whole career. And he put over Sammy big time. He was like, especially this guy, and then they all gave a Sammy chance, and then there's all the Olays and things. And then Sammy was like looking at the crowd like, oh, stop it, guys, stop it, you know, come on, like, sort of smiling and but enjoying it at the same time. And yeah, he just pretty much said, you know, the fans are the reason why we do what we do, and I know that sounds cliche, but that's the truth, and then everyone get home safe. So that was nice, and it got a positive, you know, reception from the crowd. But I think that's, from what I gather, that happens quite a lot of W shows. You know, the babyface will always get on the mic at the end. But Kevin always seems quite genuine when he talks anyway. He's, you know, he's got that gift about him where it doesn't seem like he's just sort of saying the script. He always seems like real. So, yeah. But it was still an enjoyable show. You know, I just wish now that WWE, you know, years gone by, I think it's the last couple of years now that I feel like once Mania's over now, it does have a big come down. And I felt at one point, you know, maybe like 2013, 14, 15, the Raw after Mania was like electric. And then there was all these guys come up in NXT and it hasn't really been happening recently. And I don't know what that is. I mean, maybe like the two nights now thing at WrestleMania, it takes so much out of, you know, it's so much more to write two huge nights and they just haven't got the bandwidth to kind of go for that, or maybe it's the Peacock thing now with the different pressure on the TV ratings. They don't need that as much now. It could be a number of things, but I mean, maybe you could tell me what you think it is. But yeah,
I mean, I think having a change of the guard too, and having the draft, you know, announced on Friday, and now it's coming up, and now we're just sort of in a holding pattern. And I think they do feel like, I think in the past they felt, oh, we need to ride the momentum of WrestleMania with a hot Backlash pay-per-view buy rate or get new subscribers to the network. And now it's like, we're going to be Puerto Rico. We got Bad Bunny. We're going to be just fine. And Peacock's going to be happy with our numbers and we're going to beat Backlash last year because we have Bad Bunny and Puerto Rico as a setting and a Cody Lesnar match. So I think there's less of a sense of urgency, less of, one might even say, a sense of desperation to just shake things up. And the product's hotter. You know, I think sometimes in the 3-4 weeks leading up to Mania, if the product felt stale and or at least the storylines felt like they're ripe, let's get to it. And this year didn't have that pace, so there's less to just hit the reset button on and try to hotshot. It's more like things are going well, let's not hotshot. So I think some of that's at play. Robert, what do you think about that?
I would largely agree with that because this year, despite what happened in like the main event, this was a more, I think a natural filling cycle. I would say too, the Raw after WrestleMania specifically kind of has been cold for a couple of years now. Even prior to the pandemic, I think they did enough to kind of neutralize that crowd because that crowd was one that they obviously, you know, you had the era of them doing like the PSAs on television about what that crowd was up to. So I think that systematically has, I don't know what exactly they used to do it that they eliminated it. With that said, I think they're putting a fair amount of effort into Backlash. I mean, I don't think Cody versus Brock is an insignificant match to have on that card, but there is always a little bit of this doldrums too. Like this week sometimes, or I think it might be into next week, it used to be the week they'd always go to Europe. And there would be those listless post WrestleMania European shows. So that's always been baked into.
They didn't have to go to Chris.
Right.
Came here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. International relations are changing. That's how we're doing things. I do think though they just have a maybe this all speaks to, in general, to Triple H's credit, they have a more consistent and coherent water level. So maybe you're just in general not going to have those peaks and valleys the way that we are used to. Like this WrestleMania season, for instance, was not like just loaded with these part timers that we've become so accustomed to. So, you know, the way that you know, in theory would work at a time where the regular guys were relied upon, which they are more so now than in the past couple of years, is you just go on to the next chapter of the story. And that feels like a lot of what we're doing. Yeah, we haven't really seen Roman since then, but he's kind of an inconsistent character on television anyway. So this, I understand what you're saying about it being less sort of in your face and less to get excited about, but I think the overall ebbs and flows aren't as extreme in general in the company.
Yeah, can I make a point
Chris,
of that? I just want to
go ahead.
Respond to that. I mean, I also want to say that me personally, like, I'm not really hating on that at all. I think honestly, like, this show is just, you know, we stayed like 5 minutes after the show finished, just to kind of let the crowds disperse before we walked back to our hotel, and just like looking at like the whole thing that goes into it. I mean, like, they are just tearing, you know, everything down straight away. As soon as it goes off air, like, bang, they're out, you know, next city. And it's so grueling. I mean, like, so for them just to have a little bit of a down period, like, for me, I'm kind of okay with it. I'm just, you know, I guess the sport fan of me would like the, you know, the roars of 2013, 2014 after WrestleMania, where there's so much happening after that. But like you say, you know, they're in a good position right now, and there's other reasons for it. But yeah, I mean, like, they also need to have a, you know, a bit of a mental kind of come down as well. So I guess I can be forgiving for that, because I mean, yeah, I mean, it just makes me appreciate, from attending both nights of WrestleMania and then, you know, coming up to Seattle as well, just seeing, like, you know, sort of traveling with them a little bit in a way. I mean, even though I didn't go to like the shows at the, you know, the Crypto Arena sort of for Raw and SmackDown, just seeing like they're just everywhere. I mean, you can kind of, you know, I know that's not the main reason, but, you know, you have to kind of understand sometimes that, yeah, it's pretty, takes a lot, and I'm okay with them. And they've still got, you know, like you say, where they got a good show, you know, Backlash in terms of, you know, Cody and Lesnar and Bad Bunny and all that. So I don't think they're going to phone it in too much. And I don't feel like they phoned it in, you know, too much tonight. I don't want to say house show, because I think I know what you're getting at. I mean, and it, you know, it's almost like an insult to say that, I guess. But I kind of still felt like they definitely, you know, put on a good show in the ring, and all the wrestlers, male and female tonight, you know, they put on a really good show. And you know, the tag match, I'd say, was the best match of the night with the Usos. You know, that I just find Otis and, you know, really entertaining. And Gable is just a, you know, unbelievable, you know, talent in the ring. So that kind of combination of, you know, the comedy, and even though Gable does a lot of good comedy as well, but I just enjoy his work in the ring. So I was still very much satisfied with the overall effort. That was, you know, I mean, there wasn't any huge, a lot of angles afterwards, apart from the Trish angle with Becky. The effort was still there, from definitely from the performers in the ring. And just one more thing to forget, I wrote down as well, which you may find interesting, but what they advertised the draft, literally crickets. Like, I'm telling you, like, booze and crickets, huh. Nothing. So I don't think that's surprising. Maybe you think it's surprising, but they kind of haven't really, you know, the draft in terms of like separating the rosters haven't really been, you know, it's been all over the place in the last few months, which I am forgiving during WrestleMania time. But even before that, you know, I think even like November, October last year, there was just people, you know, performers crossing week in, week out. So I think if it was a bit more strict, maybe, you know, people care more. But yeah, just wanted to tell you that they literally got like scatter boos and just very little reaction at all, like nothing, like zero Fs, if you know what I mean. So yeah, it was yeah, that was one thing to note.
I think part of it too is the blending of the roster and having floating tag champs and floating world champ, which I'm in favor of, the you know, single champions, I've seen the other side of it, but that was, you know, mostly when they were running two house shows per night and just sort of wanted that world champion main event title defense. And I kind of clung to that as maybe the rationalization for it. But yeah, they haven't been adhering to it strictly. When Ray was on Raw and then he went to SmackDown and it was sort of addressed but not really explained, and then now he's back on Raw and why. There's been so many people floating around. I don't think the average fan even has a really like clear-cut idea of who's on which show. And that, you know, takes away some of the excitement of seeing it being reshuffled when it's not even adhered to that strictly otherwise.
Yes, same thing for me. I mean, even tonight, you know, I would class myself as a pretty hardcore fan who is watching week in, week out. And, you know, I had to, like, think for a moment, you know, before the show was starting, like, because I didn't look at, like, the report or, you know, see who's on there. I just kind of, in my head, thinking, right, who's on Raw? And even I have to, like, question who's where. And I think even you do as well, you know, so because they're just everywhere. So
I do.
You know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, I do like the draft overall, and I think it's, for me personally, I do prefer that they do separate it. But I am, you know, sometimes, especially during WrestleMania, I am understanding that, you know, there's maybe a bit of cross brands. And like you say, with the titles now being on both shows, you know, the champions at least are, you know, for the tags and for the main title are moving across. But, yeah, I mean, just wanted to tell you that because, I mean, it was just still – interesting to note that, yeah, it was like that was a pretty bad reaction. So, I mean, they need to be careful how they promote that because Triple H made it out like it was like the biggest thing ever. I did see that, by the way. I saw that highlight on YouTube or whatever when I've been traveling. And, I think maybe they might underestimate how much, how little the crowd are really that invested in the draft. Because days gone by, I was like really into that, you know, back in 2005 time. You know, like when Cena went to Raw from, you know, that was like a huge thing, you know. So, yeah, we'll have to see. But.
Yeah. Chris, how long have you been in Seattle?
I've been in Seattle for, I came here for a few days and then I went up to Vancouver because I've got family up there. And then I came back down again.
Yeah,
we actually went to Portland for a day to watch the NBA. And then we drove back up to Seattle this afternoon. So not very long, like just a couple of days overall.
Well, Corey Graves was ripping on it and saying,
really?
He said, Io Sky, I'm sorry, Piper Niven looks miserable and thus fits in right here in Seattle. I've been in Seattle for 2 days and I'm miserable. I don't know what he had against Seattle, but Robert, I don't know if you've been to Seattle. I passed through Seattle on the way to Vancouver once myself. It seemed like a perfectly fine city and I wanted to spend more time there. Is it lack of sun?
Yeah. Telling you right now. Sorry. Do you want to go first? Sorry. Yeah.
I was going to say a bad joke that Seattle is kind of shorthand for a certain type of people saying a certain type of thing about a certain type of cities. That's all I'll say about that. So that might be kind of what Corey is playing into. But it's Bryan Danielson and Kurt Cobain generated from there. I mean, how bad can it really be?
Yeah, Chris, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying that, yeah, I mean, the weather hasn't helped. The last few days, it's been pouring with rain here. I mean, that generally happens a lot up in the northwest. But, yeah, I mean, like, I've been to Seattle before, there's some problems here right now with, you know, we don't want to get into all that, but homelessness. And, I think the city's seen better days for sure, it's just not as safe, I guess. But I don't know. I don't know if Corey's going there, but, I mean, it's – I still like Seattle, but yeah, I think I don't know what he meant by that exactly, but definitely the weather was pretty miserable, that's for sure. But you know, that can always make a city seem worse. You know, when it's sunny, it can completely change the perspective of places as well. So
yeah, we're feeling very different in the Minneapolis St. Paul area this week than like two weeks ago when we had a snowstorm in late March. So now it's, you know, I was on a bike ride and, you know, this lady was walking her horse on the sidewalk in the middle of the suburb, which was awesome. It's just like, and everybody's out. Like, it's just, everybody's out, like, drawing chalk on their kids are drawing chalk on their driveways and bikes are practically crashing into each other. Everyone's been just cooped up and getting their bikes out. And there's people jogging in 40-degree weather in shorts because it's like, it's not in the 20s. Yay. Although today was in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, Right. Yeah. So, yeah, no, just weather can totally change the mood of a city or change how you feel about a city depending on when you visit.
And people are very friendly here. That's what I say. You know, people here, regardless of the negative things I've mentioned, you know, in terms of everyone here, they're very, very friendly and, you know, and, but I mean, the weather is definitely not helping. But, hopefully I'll be back
that's
again
something
at some
Seattle's
point
known for.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yeah.
I'd rather be in Seattle in like mid-July than Houston. You know, I mean, when it's, you know, 114 degrees and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, every
humidity
city has their good
stuff,
and bad times.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, when do you head back to Germany?
We're going now to flying to Los Angeles tomorrow. And I got some family out in sort of a Big Bear area up in the mountains. So we're going to spend a few days with them. Nice. And then, I fly back on Saturday. So, and then back to work Monday. So it'll be pretty tiring. But, I mean, I've had a good trip in the U.S. And, WrestleMania was great. So, I'm going to probably come back in September. Yeah,
Was your trip built around WrestleMania or did it just sort of work out?
It just worked out. Well, I kind of like, my wife's laughing at me, she can hear me say, we planned to come over here because, you know, we've got family and we want to do things, you know, we've got things, places to see. But when I saw the early April, if we're going to go to California, let's go early April because, you know, I had in my mind like WrestleMania. So I kind of like, you know, kind of had to make a bit of a compromise with the wife and she saw some concerts that she was over here. So you could say it was a little bit orchestrated by me to be out here during the whole WrestleMania festivities. But I'll be back here in September and might be going to Minnesota as well because I'm a big Vikings fan as well. So you'll be happy to hear that. So,
oh, fun.
But I've never
we
seen
may
them.
Or may
been
not
in London
have
years and years ago. Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
cool.
They're my team. They're my team. So I saw them in London many years ago. I want to go and see them in Minnesota. So that'd be pretty cool. But so I just want to say thank you for having me on. And I've been listening to you on your podcast probably since around about 2011, 2012, back when it was like you and Jason Powell a lot more regularly. But then I've followed you ever since. And you do great work. And you're one of the more respected journalists or wrestling media. Some of the people on YouTube that I used to like, they're just clickbait and whatnot. So I really enjoy your integrity and everything, and I will continue being a VIP member as well. So,
well, Chris, thank you for the kind words. Somebody had posted some things I said about Drew McIntyre's status in WWE, and then I saw some people replied, "Who is this guy, Wade Keller? How can we should we trust him? I've never heard of him." And then multiple people jumped in and were like, "Yeah, he's been around. You can trust him." So, it's amazing the journey fans take and who they rely on and who they know of, and it's very diversified. But I'm glad you found us and stuck with us, and I appreciate what you notice about us that we are intentionally do differently than some other places.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to stroke your ego too much, but you are my go-to person for all things wrestling. So, just keep doing it. And you've been doing it since like the 80s or whenever you left, you graduated. So, I'm going to say keep doing it, but I'm sure you will be keep doing it anyway. So that you're great. So I appreciate that, Wade.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate your time and safe travels enjoy what time you have left here in the States.
Thank you very much. Okay.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's fun, Robert. Fun hearing somebody get their perspective who's not from here.
That is how you in-person correspondence. That was a great call. I couldn't think of questions because he just answered them. And we didn't even mention he got to see the Golden State Warriors score like a million points yesterday in the first half of that game as well. So he's having a historic thing. My only criticism of the call is he said he didn't want to stroke the host's ego too much and then mentioned he was a Vikings fan. So that was, a little suspect.
I'll take it. All right. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Chris just was, drop us an email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And just put the name of the city and the date in the subject line, and I'll be in touch, and we'll set things up just like we did with Chris. We had talked earlier about the tag, the women's tag match, and I have this on my screen, and it's from Zach regarding the Trish turn. I want to get your thoughts on what Zach and Texas had to say about this. Gentlemen, I had to wait a few minutes to calm down so I could properly compose this email. It's been a long time since I've been this angry with WWE. I've been apathetic or perplexed, but I'm absolutely livid right now. What the hell was that women's tag title match? This was Becky and Lita's first tag title defense. Not only does Lita not get to participate, they dropped the titles. They had a chance to use Becky and Lita's equity to make those belts feel important. Instead, they chose to put them on Liv and Raquel, who nobody gives a damn about. Sorry, but it's true. And for what? So Trish could turn on Becky after wrestling the whole match and taking the pin, thus looking like a giant idiot? Lita can't possibly be in on it since Trish, again, wrestled the whole match. So we're supposed to believe Trish betrayed her best friend? Why? Nobody wants to boo Trish at this stage. This is also incredibly counterproductive and infuriating. I had one thing I genuinely cared about in WWE, and they shot that straight to hell tonight. Good job, Hunter. Well, maybe it was Vince's call, Zach, from long distance. Maybe he got on a Zoom call or texted Paula Beck and says, turn Trish. The Trish turn leaked a little bit. I don't know why people report that. I mean, but that's a whole other topic, like giving away stuff that's happening later. I don't want to know what's happening next week on Succession. I just want to enjoy play out. But that little quick gripe aside, the Trish turn, we talked about it, Robert, is not, I think, going to be welcomed by some people. I'm curious if Trish is more, I don't say more entertaining, but like her character just doesn't have a lot of like hook to it as a babyface. You know, I think Lita, you know who she is. You look, you know who she is. With Trish, it's just sort of like, what is she and why do I care if you weren't around 15 years ago to kind of see what she meant in that context? So I guess I'm curious, you know, how this heel turn works. You know, sometimes even with Trish historically, a heel turn can be a spark. But I think you have to be like really popular for a heel turn to really be effective. And I don't know if people are going to care. Or they're just going to think, oh, that's just to keep Becky occupied with Trish. And I think a lot of people like Zach are going to be upset because they did invest in Lita and Trish or Lita and Becky as a team, and to have Lita not even involved in the finish. And I don't know if there's something going on there or it was just purely to set up the angle with Trish, but the whole thing is kind of weird. And, you know, why was Trish upset at Becky? And, you know, she just walked past, was it Saxton or I think it was Saxton who tried to approach her and she didn't really answer it. So maybe she's got a good promo in her and this will make sense. But, yeah, just your thoughts on what Zach had to say and his emotions.
Yeah, I feel a lot less emotional about the situation just because like I have just given up on the whole idea of women's tag titles meaning anything. Like it's become such a running joke at this point that those belts were or are going to mean anything. I think they're in a really tough spot with Trish, and I think this every time she comes back. And it's hard to square, right? So for one, they just don't sell what she was selling back in her prime. And I've always found that as a bit of a disconnect with the modern version of her. I'm not saying that's what she always has to do, but like to the extent that she is this legendary figure, I think it is so overblown in their narrative. You know, watching at the time, I don't think she was thought of as highly as history has remembered her because of the way the women are treated in the subsequent years. I don't remember her as fondly. With that said, anytime she was really effective, such as WrestleMania 22, it was as a heel. What they're going to have to do is try to find a way, though, to get a dynamic character out of her, I think, to sort of play on that, you know, Becky has replaced her as sort of the goat woman in that company. And I think there are storyline avenues to go down there. I just don't trust Trish to make it happen. And again, I'm not saying Trish is not a big star, even though it kind of sounds like I'm slamming on her a little bit. She, you know, the last time going back even to the Charlotte feud, I keep going back to that, she could not carry things on the microphone. She couldn't do it back in her time. She's not very dynamic in the ring. I think it's going to be a tough sell. It's a match I would still make, and I probably would have still gone basically this course. because I don't think the tag titles even meant that much. Where they go with Trish and Lita is interesting because they're also classic rivals too, even though they portray them as besties on the show. So I say all that negative stuff to say I'm fairly open minded about the direction that they're going to go with this. That's very bad analysis on my part, but I kind of have a bit of mixed feelings on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But I think Zach, you know, his email is reflective of something that felt like it was just getting started, and now they just went a completely different direction with it. And I understand his frustration. Let's bring Kyle from Baltimore to the conversation. Kyle, welcome. Oh, what did you think of the angle with Trish tonight?
That was fine. I just, you know, Becky's not a tag team wrestler, so the fact that he did this was fine. My only worry is with this feud potentially with Trish and Becky is that is Trish wrestling her matches when she came back it's not good. I think back to her match with Charlotte, but that was back in 2018. That match was really good, but again, 2019 to 2023, I'm not sure. That's what I'm kind of a little worried about is that whatever this match happens, if it happens at Backlash, is this the match itself? I kind of fear, even because after watching what happened tonight, it wasn't good. It didn't show Becky's strength in the ring, and it didn't show Liv's strength in the ring. Either Raquel's, so the first time Liv, I mean, Becky and Raquel actually kind of faced off, and it didn't show the best light with them. So it just, the whole match kind of fell flat, and it just makes me kind of worried about this match with Trish, is that it's just going to be, that's just what I'm worried about. And I am glad that Becky is no longer a tag team champion, but what I am worried about is this potential match and feud, really, with Trish and Becky. What do you think about that?
Robert, anything you want to add to what we've said earlier on that? Or what Kyle brought up?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it. I think, and I'll just reiterate again. I think there's a ton of potential there, but there are landmines all over this. And unfortunately, the victim of that what ended up being Becky, a character that, as we mentioned earlier, is kind of struggling a little bit relative to her push and her general popularity.
Kyle, what else? Yeah, I feel kind of talked out on that too.
So I was talking about Io Sky being a number one contender facing Bianca. I'm kind of happy this happened at this point, and that this probably be a breakup for Damage Control, hopefully. So I am glad that EO is number one contender, and will hopefully make Bianca more interesting as a character. But I guess she's going after, she's feuding with another Japanese wrestler who doesn't speak that much English. So that'll be interesting how that's going to work. So Damage Control still going to be a part of it because Bayley's still going to be there about how long that's going to last for. But the match should be good. I'm looking forward to that, to the match itself. But I guess I'm thinking long term for Bianca's sake, what is she going to be doing now that, you know, Rhea's the SmackDown champion? Everyone thought it was going to be Rhea and Bianca, which I did 1.2, but, you know, it is what it is. But I just think long-term, what is left for Bianca if she's going to remain champion if EO doesn't win the title, whatever that happens?
Yeah, and I'll add to it before I throw it to you, Robert. Like, do you think there's a chance Bayley ends up the babyface in this for giving up her spot to Sky, and Sky and Dakota having an added kind of, you know, an attitude towards Bayley about being self-interested, but is this potentially a path to Bayley actually being the sympathetic one, or is this finally breaking EO Sky with her flashy athletic style into a role where it's more natural fit, fans want to cheer her, but is facing Bianca the natural way to tell that story, unless it's Bayley costing Sky the match out of jealousy herself? In other words, I guess as I kind of ask the question, I could see this going different directions. I think there's the more obvious direction, but there's some alternatives.
I mean, I kind of think Bayley, I thought for a while Bayley was going to end up a babyface out of all of this. EO might be a better option based on what you're saying. And, you know, really since her tag team days, there really hasn't been the chance to embrace her like that. So I think that is territory to mine. And I think, like, obviously Bayley, when focused, can be really good as a heel. We just really haven't got that lately. It to me, this is a hard one though to really read the tea leaves on just now. I think the important thing, the big takeaway, was Damage Control needed to be done, and that they have accomplished that. I forgot about Bianca, honestly, going into the show tonight and throughout it. Like I just forgot about her. And then I guess I mentioned Rhea wasn't on the show. I haven't processed where those characters are really headed going forward.
And in a sense, with the draft coming up, I mean, I feel like, I don't know if you want to overinvest in thinking too hard. You know, Kyle, you say what's next for? Mm-hmm. Well, I think we just kind of have to wait for the draft. I mean, I think we're kind of, you know, there's going to be backlash hype.
Yeah.
Like you got, you know, hyper backlash, and it's going to be about Bad Bunny, and it's going to be about Cody Brock, and, you know, they'll probably do, you know, Usos and Solo against Riddle, Sammy, and KO, and then, you know, fill out the undercard a little bit, and that's fine. But, like, I guess I kind of think not to punt down the road too much, but I think we got to wait till kind of mid-May for things to settle before it's even worth putting a ton of mental energy into what's next for some of these key players.
Yeah. I guess it makes sense. Yeah. It's this whole draft that's happening and some that's going to be soon, whatever that is. But I guess the last thing I'll bring up is Cody kind of brought up him about earlier too, about him facing Lesnar potentially. We'll see. We'll see what Lesnar says next week. But, in terms of this, like I said before, it should be fine. I'll be interested and curious how that match is going to transpire, though, in terms of how that's going to, what's that going to look like, and how, and if Rose will still come out, still get in cheered, he's still getting cheered now, but I'm wondering how long that's going to last in this feud with Lesnar. But I guess that's it. This fuck off.
All right, great. Thanks, Kyle. All right, we'll shift to JB from Detroit. He's got an email on four topics. One, I'm not sure what the point of this Lashley-Reed feud is. I think both guys need to be winning right now and shouldn't really be taking a loss anytime soon. I see another more definitive match in the near future. I'm also not really sure how I'm supposed to feel about either wrestler. Do they need to define – I mean, Lashley's character has been so wishy-washy and conflicted, and I felt at some weeks or some stretches of weeks, I don't even think I get a sense that they know what they want to do with him. You know, crowds chanting for him. Reed, I guess, has been, you know, he has been a heel, but I don't think he's done anything that really defines him. So, I mean, I think there's something to that. It's sort of like, you know, with Piper Niven, it's like really show that you put thought into who they're supposed to be and get us feeling emotionally some way about them. And I feel like Lashley's sort of getting the legacy star pop and you know, Reed is going to get a pop for some of the moves he does and the way he carries himself. But I think JB's got a point. It is hopefully this feud defines their characters a little bit better.
Yeah, and I agree that they need that definition. I don't know that Bobby necessarily needs that in this feud, because I think this is one you can kind of go for as just, you know, it's just a hoss fight anyway. And as you said, because I think what your comment from the caller needs to be emphasized in that, like, it's not really worth it for any of us to get too emotionally involved in anything other than Brock Lesnar versus Cody, I think, in the next month or so, because everything, even though they won't stick to it, at least the feuds will change for like a couple of weeks. So I think we need to temper things in general on that, because for all we know, those two guys could be, you know, baby faces or heels on separate brands in a month and a half, and all of it will be moot. It's more of they needed to get their act together going into WrestleMania, or, you know, find something for Bobby to do. That was more of the sin, I think, than what they're doing now.
Number two, he says WWE stuck with the idea that Brock Lesnar is mad that he attacked Cody because he was upset that he didn't get top billing at Mania. I believe it was Rich Fan on the Raw Post show last week who said that this explanation would fly because it's been stated countless times that Brock was perfectly happy with an early match to get out of the building as soon as possible. That's lazy storytelling, in my opinion. So the only counter I can come up with, and it doesn't make sense because they made such a big deal out of Omos and, you know, oh, battle of, you know, this super tall guy against the Beast and Lesnar. But, you know, maybe Brock just, he's going to say, hey, I should be the main eventer. I should be in a more featured match. But it's also the stipulation that he can't get a shot at Reigns that is irking him. But, yeah, they've got work to do here because it does seem like Brock's the guy who, if you can put me on first and I can catch a plane home, that's going to be what he wants. And so it is a little bit more of a challenge to get people to buy that Brock is sitting around being jealous of Cody being in the main event. They've, I think, even shown some skepticism in their framing of that as a possible reason. Like, is that really it? So maybe there is more coming. And this is just sort of the beginning of, you know, speculation. And once we find out more, there'll be some that makes sense. Robert, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I thought that explanation. Yeah, they've been doing it so subtly too, that I am hoping there is a bit of a pivot from that. You know, with just the announcers kind of mentioning that, because I just in general, I think it's a very, as you pointed out, just a very weak rationale for those things. It goes completely against the Brock Lesnar character in every possible way. I think the path of I can't challenge for the title because you didn't win is a much cleaner path to get this feud off the ground. I also just think in general, if you don't have a good explanation, Brock's one guy you can kind of just say he likes to beat people up because he likes to beat people up. Now, everything they did last week to be that elaborate, you do need a little bit of building blocks because of how elaborate and kind of ridiculous they portrayed Brock last week before he actually turned on Cody.
Number three, part of the idea of putting Alpha Academy against Usos to turn Alpha Academy babyface. I actually hope so because I enjoy the act, but I wouldn't mind seeing a new chapter in their story. It feels like they're already babyfaces in the sense that Maxine is making fun of Chad, which kind of turns him babyface. And then Otis has just always been sort of likable. I mean, it's hard to take him seriously as a bad guy. So, yeah, but it does seem like Usos' match framed Alpha Academy as babyfaces. Almost like, yeah, it's just that's who they are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think – as you said, it's something that they don't need an official moment, I don't think, to turn face. They will just be accepted as faces, and I think there's really no doubt about that, unless they go with the split of the two. But I think you and I are both of the opinion that it's probably the wrong way to go and doesn't seem like, at least right now, the direction that they're going in.
Yeah, Chad, I think Gable and Otis together are bigger than the sum of their parts. I think they'd be fine separate, but I don't know that separate. They'll be useful and have some good matches and all that, but yeah, there's something about the chemistry with them, and I don't know that Gable can be rehabbed into something more than he already is in the tag team division, and guys at his level in the singles division just don't go anywhere. You know, like in a tag team, you can kind of, if you're an entertaining act and can have good matches, there's not as many tag teams, but in the singles division as a babyface, I just think he'll kind of get lost in the shuffle and he'll just be doing TV jobs. So in a way that I think maybe I'm wrong and they'd get serious about pushing him, but I think there'd be an uphill battle given how marginalized he's been for so long.
Well, look at like the guys who you would consider like his peers too. You know what I mean? Like the Garganos and those guys that are kind of at that level, like they're not well taken care of right now. As far as storylines go.
Yep. All right, and then number four, it almost seems like the last few years that Backlash is the actual season finale of WWE rather than stories culminating at Mania. Not sure if that's good or bad, just an observation. As always, love the show when everyone go VIP. Yeah, I mean, this year feels different. It's a new storyline for Cody. The Bad Bunny thing is adds a whole element. The new setting in Puerto Rico adds an element. You know, the Riddle being in the mix with KO and Sammy against Usos and Solo works, and you don't have Reigns in a rematch. So far, it feels differentiated enough for me to not feel like, yep, it's WrestleMania rematches.
Yeah, and that's what I said. It's just the next kind of chapter in a story, which, again, I think we're just conditioned to think of WrestleMania a little bit differently because of how it had always been presented. I think this is fine for Backlash because it's not, you know, WrestleMania rematch as it kind of gets coined. It's the furthering. It's, you know, it's dealing with the fallout. Certainly there will be rematches, but it is not the theme of the show. And as you said, the Bad Bunny setting is very much a character in this, the Mysterio storyline being elevated the way it is. Everything other than Cody's promo when he said WrestleMania, and I thought he was like challenging him to a match next year, because I forgot that it's WrestleMania Backlash, not just Backlash anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Wayne Hollander said, Otis is over again. Gable delivers so reliably. I hope he gets a shot at something better sometime soon. Yeah, also adds, Trish was pretty obvious interacting, and the heel turn didn't surprise me at all. And Bayley was very obvious in telegraphing her antipathy. So just some observations from Wayne there. Michael from Bunkertown, Florida says, Brock attacked Cody because he didn't like being in the opening match. What? Who booked this? A third grader? How unimaginative. A third grader would do better than that. They should call it the uncreative team. That's what he's going down. Thank you. So again, just some additional feedback on topics we've been covering. Anything else, Robert, you want to touch on from tonight's show that might be of significance that we just haven't happened to cover yet in bouncing around here?
Yeah, I'm scanning through kind of mentally on what the show was. We didn't comment much on the Mysterio segment, but I don't think there was a lot of advancement there.
It's starting to feel like a rerun with, you know, like, I hate it. I really like the Dominic Ray feud, but having Dominic come out and just say some of the same things, it's losing its theme for me. I mean, like, to me, WrestleMania doesn't have to be the blow off, but it should have advanced something. And again, this could be because they had to reshuffle the show, but having Dominic come out and just recite the same promo he's been doing, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about it. And not that it was bad. It just felt like too much the same.
Well, and I think that might have been the one segment that was probably most affected if there were a lot of logistical issues, because a lot of what makes that angle over is the ensembles of, you know, I'm not expecting Edge to be there, but, you know, the Edge and Rhea and that whole vibe that just kind of wasn't there. The Sammy, I just a criticism I had, I probably wouldn't have cut to Sammy and Riddle the way they did. If they were, you know, purely going for a pop, not that there was really anything wrong with it from a television perspective. That is Sammy's role seemingly on Raw shows, where he has like storyline development on SmackDown, and on Raw shows, his job is just to kind of get the pop and run out there, which not a bad spot to be in, but there's not always a whole lot going on there. It was much more of a Kevin Owens night as far as the polar patterns between the two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. We can end on that note then. Robert, always great having you on.
Always great to be on. Waited a been a little while. I wanted to make sure I got something in a WrestleMania season. I think this counts, so I'm going to count it.
Definitely. Well, thanks, Robert. Thanks, Chris, our on-site correspondent. Thanks for callers and emailers. Thanks to our listeners. And on behalf of all of them, this is Wade Keller thanking you. And we'll be by Wednesday night with our Dynamite post show and Friday night with our SmackDown post show. And we'll have our new flagship this week, too. So check that out over on the Blue Logo show. And most of all, check out Robert's show covering MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans, with now even more of a tie-in between, formally a tie-in between WWE and UFC. And I'm curious how that goes over time, obviously, and how Dana White coexists with Vince McMahon, technically, I think, in a slightly higher position in the corporate hierarchy. So having you and Rick Bonsi analyze that each week, it gives you something new to talk about that ties things in. So search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to the Daily Cast. And there's, like I said, shows on a variety of topics, including Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, a WWE-focused show also, which I didn't mention earlier. Talk to NXT crew with their look at NXT every week. So, yeah, check it out if you haven't yet. It is free, and it is some really good shows. And it is worth more than nothing it costs to subscribe. That's a low compliment, Robert, but you know what I mean.
I always rationalize it that I am broadcast television on the Torch. Like, you get me for free, I am in the most amount of homes. You know, you can pay for that premium stuff, but it's viewed by a lot less people. SmackDown gets way better ratings than Raw.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. Well, absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you all next time.